fired, FBI Director James Comey gave his side of the story in his dealings with President Trump, speaking under oath yesterday to the Senate Intelligence Committee, and an overflowing crowd of reporters and lawmakers were exploring the takeaways a day removed from the testimony with Charles Franklin. He's a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and directs the Marquette Law School Poll. He also is the co-founder of Pollster.com and co-founder of PollsandVotes.com. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
Well, there's no doubt that yesterday's testimony from former FBI Director Comey was one of the biggest political spectacles of the year. Did yesterday's proceedings live up to the hype that was generated in recent weeks? Were there bombshells?
I think it certainly did become an amazing spectacle when we see all the bars and coffee shops that were filled up with the video of the testimony. It's been a while, I think, since we saw a political spectacle that brought so many people out as viewers communally to watch that. Whether it lived up to this hype or not, I think, is partly a matter of what your expectations were. But I think Director Comey did state on the record now and under oath several things that had rested from anonymous sources before. I don't believe there was an element that he spoke to that hadn't been mentioned before. So in that sense, there wasn't a blockbuster headline that says, we never knew that this happened, but Comey says it did. So in that sense, I think some people feel like it didn't break a lot of new ground. But I would say the fact that it was testimony under oath and in public makes those claims now an important part of the public record, and in that sense does advance the Senate investigation.
Yeah, so nothing groundbreaking there. But what were some of the things that we learned from Comey's testimony? Break it down.
I think there are several pieces here, and it partly depends on how you prioritize this. What we saw in part was Director Comey's assessment of the president's personality and character. And I think you could have a debate about how critical or how unimportant that is. The director said that he kept these notes because he was afraid the president would lie about what happened in their private conversation. Lie was his word. I think it's undoubtedly a word that he chose very deliberately. And it says that from the very beginning, he did not trust the president. And that speaks to the president's character, though it also speaks to Comey's preconceptions about the president and what his expectations were. And I think some of the president's supporters would say, so Comey came into this with a bias. But it is clear that he did that from the very beginning and felt he needed to do that. So that's one part of it. And it's also part of Comey's claim that the president said, I need loyalty, I need your loyalty. And that was done in a setting that seemed to make that a requirement of Comey keeping his job.
Almost a quid pro quo situation?
Almost a direct thing. And Comey says, I was surprised by this. This is in the private dinner in the White House. I was surprised by this because the president had twice or three times before told me I was going to remain as FBI director. So in that setting, that is also speaking to the president's need for loyalty from subordinates and his willingness to hold their job hostage to, seemingly, to what he says. So I think those are two examples of the character issue and Comey's perception of it. Then we get to the point where there's a direct claim that the president said in the private meeting in the Oval Office, I hope you can let Flynn go on this. He's a good man. I hope you can see your way to letting this go. That's at the core of, did he, in saying that, try to impede an ongoing investigation. Trump's critics say that is the direct claim of what they see as an obstruction of justice. What Speaker Ryan said yesterday and some of Trump's other supporters said is a novice in the White House just expressing a wish rather than giving an order,
yes.
A hope. And that came up in the testimony yesterday where I believe it was Senator Burr, but it may have been someone else, said, so was that an order? And Comey said, not in the words he spoke. But Comey also said, I'm in a private meeting with the president. He says, I hope you'll do something. I took that
as an
order. Directive. Mm. Even though I didn't choose to obey it. So I think that is a much more concrete and specific claim of Trump asking for some modification to an investigation. The other things that go to character may be more or less important depending on how you see them and how well you trust Comey's interpretation. But they don't seem to me to go directly to that narrower question of whether Trump tried to impede the investigation. The one last thing is we did learn that in at least two telephone conversations, Trump asked Comey to publicly say he was not a target of the investigation. And when Comey didn't act on that after 2 weeks, Trump called him back and again asked for that. And Comey said, you should go through the assistant director of the of justice. You know, this is not
the protocol,
the way you should do it. And Trump apparently said, I'll do that, and hung up. And Comey says that's the last they spoke. So that also sets up the notion that this was something the president wanted from the FBI director, tried to get it publicly at least twice, including a follow-up when it wasn't forthcoming. And again, Comey doesn't say, and that's why I was fired. In fact, he says, I take the president at his word with Lester
the
Holt
Russia.
That it was Russia. So I think those three things really stood out to me as pretty substantive, but pointing in somewhat different directions. Character, perhaps interfering with an investigation, and this last one, I demand of a subordinate that he do something. The subordinate won't do it.
He loses.
And then shortly after that, he loses his job. And the last thing, the thing that President Trump has certainly emphasized, is that Comey says, yes, three times I told him he was not the current focus of an investigation. And the president in his tweets this morning seems to think that that completely vindicates him.
We're talking right now with Charles Franklin. He's a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and director of the Marquette Law School Poll. He's also co-founder of Pollster.com, founder of PollsandVotes.com. Charles, how forthcoming was Comey yesterday? Because in the past, he seemed hesitant to share details about the Russia probe or elaborate on what was exactly being investigated.
And again, he stayed to that. But the testimony he gave yesterday, when it touched on classified matters, he said, I can't talk about that publicly. That was in keeping with his previous testimony. But I would say the testimony yesterday was deliberately focused on the things he could talk about. And that part of the hearing, the open hearing, went on for 2.5 hours. I understand the classified hearing lasted less than 1 hour. So it doesn't seem like that classified material, at the very least, took as long to get through, perhaps in the absence of cameras. So I do think there was a difference there. But it also goes to the role of what he was testifying to in testifying to his conversations with the president. He even says at one point, I wrote the memo to omit classified material so that this could be part of the public record. I haven't seen anyone comment on it, but if he was deliberately omitting classified parts of the conversation, then his memo is in fact not a complete record of that conversation. It's instead an edited version of it. And that, I think, is perhaps a little bit difficult. He also did say that Mr. Mueller, the special investigators, press special counsel for this,
Robert Mueller,
has the complete set of these memos. In the end, I think that's what we as the public would like to see, the unedited versions, because surely what we heard yesterday was only part of those memos, not the complete material.
Yeah. We're talking right now with Charles Franklin about the Comey testimony yesterday. You can add your voice to the conversation. 800-642-1234. What did you see in this testimony? What about Comey leaking memos to the press? How would you like to see Congress proceed with the investigation? Join in 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We're unpacking the testimony of former FBI Director James Comey a day removed from his appearance before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for Joy Cardine. Florida Senator Marco Rubio defended President Trump during the hearing. Rubio pushed Comey over his decision to not publicly disclose that Trump was not a person of interest in the ongoing investigation into Russia's influence in the 2016 election. Do you agree with Marco Rubio that Comey was in the wrong here? Is there a question that you want clarified, that you want answered? Join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. Charles Franklin stays with us. He's a professor of law and public policy at Marquette. He directs the Marquette Law School poll. Let's go straight to the phones now with Tyler in Hill Point. Hi, Tyler.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I get the sense here that this, coming from the anti-Trump people, it seems to be based in nuance and feeling and emotion rather than facts and what is said. I mean, at one point, Comey says, I take Trump at his word that he fired me over the, my dealings with the Russia probe. But then at another point says, he didn't, in words, ask me to stop the investigation, but that's the feeling or the sense that I got. And on top of that, when he was asked to maybe make a public statement about Trump not being under investigation, Trump was told to take the proper channels. But then when Loretta Lynch asked Comey to, or tells Comey to classify or depict the Hillary Clinton email investigation as a matcher rather than an investigation, he politically makes his decision. And it just seems like, not based in facts here. We're not going forward based on facts.
Tyler, are you continuing to follow this closely?
Oh, of course. Every day.
Why?
Why? Because I think it's important to our country that we sort this matter out and go forward, like I said, based on facts, not emotions or how we feel.
Charles Franklin, how much is this one man's word against another?
In one sense, it's almost completely that, in that the key meetings that Comey described yesterday were one-on-one with the president or the president-elect back in earlier January. And so those events, unless there really are tapes of them, are things that ultimately have to be what they each claim. Now, there are questions you could ask of other witnesses. You could ask everybody who was in the room at the Oval Office that was asked to leave so the two could speak quiet privately.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Mr. Kushner.
Mm-hmm. You can certainly have them testify as to whether that event occurred, even if they don't know what was said. They weren't there. You can also ask people what was said to them about the meeting immediately after. In Comey's case, it's these memos that he shared with other top FBI officials. So there you have a record of what one participant said about the meeting to other people at the time. Well, did President Trump speak to any of his advisors or associates immediately after these meetings. So there are ways to follow up, but as long as one side says X and the other side says Y, then you really are, who do you believe? And what's the difference of interpretation? The same words can be interpreted one way or interpreted another way, and we're seeing different interpretations flourishing right now.
Comey took offense to the way President Trump portrayed him, as well as the FBI, after his firing. And I want to take a listen to what he had to say.
And although the law required no reason at all to fire an FBI director, the administration then chose to defame me and, more importantly, the FBI by saying that the organization was in disarray, that it was poorly led, that the workforce had lost confidence in its leader. Those were lies, plain and simple.
Comey used the word defame here, which is not a small allegation. Can you help us through this?
Yes, I think there you saw the most personal and raw feelings about this. He said they defamed me and, more importantly, the FBI. Comey identifies with the FBI, the idea that it was in disarray, that it was poorly led, that morale was very low. Those were things that the White House, and specifically the White House spokespeople, said about the FBI in the aftermath of the firing, saying that many FBI agents had called the White House to say how much they were unhappy. That's been disputed. But I think this goes to the element of Comey's character that has been talked about even among his friends, that he takes terrific pride in his image for integrity, that he's a forthright stand-up guy. And so in this, I think the White House, if you will, struck at the core of his vanity, his self-image on this. And it's the one piece of the testimony yesterday that I at least hear a little quaver in his voice when he says that was a lie. So I think this does go to his getting under his skin about this. And it is disputed. The White House claims the FBI really was opposed to Comey in a lot of this and unhappy. The current temporary director of the FBI says no, morale was high and terrific support for Comey.
Let's take another call now. Steve in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I think anyone can take what they want out of the testimony depending on what they already believe. But what I took out of it was that, you know, anyone who thinks that an administration doesn't put pressure or try to influence an investigation really has their head stuck in the sand. What I took out of it is there's a way to do it and a way not to do it. The Obama administration, as well as other administrations, knew you do it through surrogates. You have Loretta Lynch go out and say something to the director. You don't have the president do it themselves. And that's what I took out of it. Trump didn't realize that you always have to have that plausible deniability, and I think that's what harmed him, not knowing that and treating it like he's a CEO as opposed to realizing he's in a political arena.
I think this is a good point because it touches on Speaker Ryan's point yesterday that Trump is just naive, or the argument that Trump is just a New York businessman and this is the way New York businessmen negotiate and there's nothing worse about it than that, versus the argument that this was a direct attempt to interfere with an investigation. And even in Washington, that's a big deal. So I do think this is where there's lots of room for interpretation. I do think the news yesterday that Lynch directly asked or ordered, depending on how you want to think about that, Comey to use the word matter rather than investigation with respect to Clinton's email server, does speak to the point that Justice Department officials, attorney generals, do in fact discuss these kinds of things. And under normal circumstances, they're minor and unimportant. But when they touch on a really important matter, like the Clinton email server or these discussions with Trump, the nuances of the word, as well as the core of what they said, becomes quite important.
Steve, thank you so much for your call. And now let's go to John in La Crosse. Hi, John.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind on the Comey testimony?
Well, I listened to the entire thing, and I guess I was most disappointed in the very last questioner, Senator McCain. I supported him in the past, and he just appeared incoherent in his attempt to frame questions and make statements. And I just thought it was kind of sad. He appears to have lost his edge. I don't know if anybody else thought that or if it was just me.
I can support that to the extent that it was the topic of conversation at the coffee shop this morning when I stopped by and chatted with the six o'clock coffee folks. I said, what do you think about the testimony yesterday? And the very first thing they brought up was John McCain. Mm-hmm. I then went up to order my coffee, and not one but two people in line ahead of me were talking to the cashier about John McCain. So it's certainly the buzz of my coffee shop this morning. It, by all accounts, it was an incoherent line of questioning. And I think Senator McCain's friends are a little concerned about why that happened, whether it was poor preparation or a bad day or something more substantive. But it was the last thing that happened in the testimony. Shouldn't take away from the other contents of the testimony, I think, which I believe are ultimately the substantive part of yesterday.
Now, President Trump's attorney, Mark Cassowitz, he read a long statement pushing back on the Comey testimony. It seems the biggest grievance is over Michael Flynn and Comey saying that Trump pressed him to stop investigating Flynn. Let's take a listen to Cassowitz on this.
The president never, in form or substance, directed or suggested that Mr. Comey stop investigating anyone. Including the president never suggested that Mr. Comey, quote, let Flynn go, close quote. As the president publicly stated the next day, he did say to Mr. Comey, quote, General Flynn is a good guy. He has been through a lot, close quote. And also, quote, asked how General Flynn is doing, close quote.
What should you make of this pushback?
Yeah, I think this is very interesting because it is a seems to be a direct disputation of Comey's testimony. And even if you read it fairly carefully, you get the line that says the president never in form or substance said something, including let Flynn go. So that's very direct. Again, unless there are tapes of this, it will be hard to verify whether it's true or not. But it is one of the points where there's a direct confrontation. Now, sometimes you can parse it less so. So saying that the president didn't ask for an end to the Russia investigation is a phrase that we've heard from the White House frequently. But that's a nuance. Are you talking about the whole Russia investigation? Are you talking about just General Flynn's part of it? There could be a fine line there of what do you say, and it's technically right, but doesn't go to the issue. But on this particular comment yesterday, it does seem to directly confront the Comey testimony. And if there is a tape, and indeed that language doesn't appear, that would be terrifically damaging to Comey. On the other hand, if in fact the president suggested a tape when there never has been such a tape, then it won't be verifiable one way or another. And we're back to, well, when does a president in a statement to the nation and the world, even if it appears on Twitter, imply something that's simply not true?
And Judy on Facebook to that end said, Comey's testimony was, quote, dignified, articulate, and presented facts that he could back up. I'm sure there was much more presented in the closed hearings yesterday afternoon. Judy says, bring on the tapes. What went on in the closed hearings, do you think?
I would imagine, but of course this is just guessing, that names of specific people who are in intercepts of Russian communication or other kinds of national security could be there. There could also be names of people who are subjects to investigation, more details about what's going on. But, of course, now I'm totally speculating, and perhaps you should back off from doing that speculation, but I can't help myself.
Let's now take another call. Scott in Johnson Creek. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my phone call. My question is going back to the original dinner invitation and who invited who, why can't the investigators just subpoena the telephone records? Because if you would subpoena the telephone records based on that time frame that Mr. Comey talked about or Mr. Trump talked about, you should see a pattern, whatever, of phone calls between the White House and the FBI or the White House and the Department of Justice or the Department of Justice and the White House.
I think, and I imagine, that those records could come into play. Certainly in the past, the norm has been to log incoming and outgoing phone calls, especially those from the president, certainly. I'm less certain about what the status of those records would be right now. And it is an issue of some reports said Comey asked for the meeting with the president that resulted in the dinner. Comey said it was the president who invited him to the dinner. But I think it also, that's the sort of corroborating information I was mentioning earlier. People who saw them go into a meeting together or were asked to leave the room, these phone records of who contacted whom, what direction did the phone call go. But a lot of what we're talking about here is the substance of what was said, the very words. Did the president ask for loyalty, and did he do that in a context in which Comey's continuation as FBI director had been raised and at least inferentially was part of that? Did the president say, I hope you can let Flynn go? Did Comey say you're three times, you're not the subject of investigation? Comey says he did now. Did the president push on that matter in the way Comey describes on the phone call? Those are the things that are much more direct. But I agree with you that getting the circumstances around it helps build the case that, yes, we know for certain this meeting did occur. We know for certain it was the two of them alone in the office. And then what happened still remains subject to debate.
Scott, thanks so much for your call. Quickly here before we go to break, Charles, how does Attorney General Jeff Sessions factor into this investigation? Because Comey said he didn't feel comfortable going to Sessions for help, for cover, when the president was overstepping his bounds.
I think there are a couple of ways. One is we know that the Attorney General did ultimately recuse himself from the Russia part of the Justice Department because he had met with the Soviet the Russian ambassador and not disclosed that when asked about it during his Senate confirmation hearings. Comey suggested yesterday that there were other reasons that were classified that he couldn't talk about that led him to believe Sessions would have to recuse himself. So that was a tantalizing hint that really wasn't followed up on in public. So I think if Sessions is really recused from this investigation, he shouldn't be involved in very many conversations about it. But as we saw, Sessions was in the room and asked to leave at the White House meeting in the Oval.
We're talking about the testimony here of James Comey yesterday, 800-642-1234. You can add your voice to this discussion or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Back after this on the Ideas Network. Former FBI Director James Comey said under oath yesterday that he helped reveal details of his private conversations with President Trump because he thought doing so would lead to the appointment of a special counsel to investigate the administration. In a new Washington Post ABC News poll, just over 1 in 3 people, 36%, said they trust what Mr. Trump says a great deal or a good amount. 55% trust Trump on Russia, less than that or none at all. We're looking at what to make of the James Comey testimony with Marquette University law professor Charles Franklin. He also directs the Marquette Law School poll. You can join in as well at 800-642-1234 or post about the Comey testimony on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Charles, I know you keep a close eye on the polls. As I was mentioning there, the Washington Post ABC News poll just out. What are the polls telling us?
I think what we're seeing in the polls, and this one's fairly representative, is more people doubt the president's word on this or perspective on it, but a third or a bit better than a third, 36% do. I think the problematic part is 36% on this question trust the president's account, but his approval rating is also about 36 to 38%. And so what that means is that if you approve of the job the president's doing, if you support him, you're also willing to take his word for it. And if you're in that roughly 55 or 56% who currently disapprove of the job he's doing, and again, across a number of polls, that's about where it stands, then you also doubt his account of that. So I think the real issue here is, are we seeing on this investigation just a reflection of our overall feelings about the president, whether positive or negative? If we saw some divergence in that, if the president's account suddenly gained in credibility and we saw a rise in the people that believed what he said despite his overall job approval not moving up, that would really show us that people were reaching an independent judgment about his activities in this investigation. And, of course, conversely, if Comey's testimony was very damaging yesterday, we might see this trust number go down quite a bit, even though his overall approval might not go down as much. So all I'm saying is we end up with this sort of overall view of the president. And then it trickles over into how do we think he's handling the economy? How do we think he's handling this Russia investigation? Did he impede an investigation? But it all boils down to his supporters and his opponents. Sometimes you do see a divergence between those measures. Right now, they seem to be tracking awfully closely. One another.
Yeah. Let's take another call now. Arnold in Verona. Hi, Arnold.
I'd like to know if Professor Franklin listened to Mark Levin's podcast last night because it has an entirely different interpretation of the events of yesterday.
I'm sorry I did not. I will try to follow up on that because I'm actually anxious to hear alternative interpretations. I did listen to a variety of things yesterday that included some very strong supporting statements for the president, saying that in that reading of the testimony, they saw the president vindicated, as he himself says this morning. And we did read some from his attorney's statements yesterday pointing to the things they believe are vindication.
It's really too complex to go into, but I had one narrow question, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because the point of what Mr. Levin has presented is not supposed to be gospel. It's just that he offers so many different points that really would take us beyond the time frame for a caller like myself or someone else to raise issues of contention or difference. But the one narrow question I had was about the question of loyalty and what the interpretation of that is. Since we don't have any sense of the levels of priority for investigation that the FBI uses to ferret out the leaks, it just occurred to me that everyone was working under the assumption that the president's use of the word loyalty or requesting loyalty from Comey was designed to be like he was supposed to do what the president wanted. And to me, I thought, well, maybe he was more concerned that the FBI had kind of put this investigation of leaks into a tertiary level, and therefore was disserving the president and the people of the United States by not preventing leaks or taking every effort to ferret them out, so that the point of view that was presented in the press day after day after day was not just exclusively anti-Trump or anti-administration. And I just raised the question. I don't have an answer, and I don't have a suggestion. I just think that there are some different ways of looking at the language here, especially since the actual factual data and documentary evidence is not available to either or to any consumer or voter. We can't really know what's going on. We're always accepting the interpretations of, quote, the experts, unquote, which already yesterday were disproved, especially the notation about the New York Times being totally wrong, even by Comey's own standards.
Great. Thank you for clarifying that. I think this is going to that question. In a way, I tried to open the show with this, the idea that some of this goes to Comey's interpretation of the president's character and what the meaning of things were, and loyalty would be a good example of that, as opposed to a specific claim about can you let Flynn go? And I see those as a little bit different. But they do go to your broader point that both of these are in the context of a private conversation between two people. And so we are ultimately left without a definitive document in the absence of hypothetical tapes. But I do think this is the question of, do we see corroborating evidence, either circumstantial or over the course of the length of the investigation, more of it? And finally, to the point of leaks, this is certainly something that the administration has felt bedeviled by in this and many other areas, and surely a source of frustration that the leaks continue to happen. And you can have a strong argument about whether the FBI should or should not be in the business of preventing leaks or prosecuting leaks. And the president today points to Comey as a leaker himself, and that is also part of the White House's counteroffensive today.
Stepping back from this conversation between two people and the accounts of one side versus the other, are we losing focus on the scope of the Russia investigation, on the greater issues around national security?
I think there are two parts to this, and the Russia involvement in our election, their active efforts to interfere with our elections, could be the sole subject of this investigation, and ostensibly started out as the focus of this Senate committee's hearings. And it is important, I think, because it's the one area where we've seen our national security leadership, from the Director of National Intelligence to the Director of the National Security Agency to the Director of the CIA and the directors, both Comey and his successor at FBI, all agreeing that the evidence is overwhelming that the Russians took active measures to interfere with our election. That, for a national security person, is a big deal. And yet it has now become commingled with links to the Trump campaign or satellites around that campaign, people who might not be the president.
But, or financial interests with Russia.
And financial interests of the Trump organization. With them. So in that sense, we've unfortunately, in my view, blurred the distinction between the national security implications of a at least competitor country, if not a foe, actively in interfering with the democratic process. And that also is an area where Trump has sometimes disputed that that happened at all, saying it's a democratic story to excuse the election loss. So I think there you see this open, universal agreement among national security leadership that something happened that's important.
Let's take another quick call now. Mary in Pewaukee. Hi, Mary.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity. I originally was going to say something that a previous woman caller before the commercial was going to say. So if I may say, Maxine Waters condensed a lot for me and others that listened to Tavis Smiley. She's a representative from California. If it looks like a duck and all that, okay, Tillerson was with Exxon. There are connections with Russia. Page is connected with the Kremlin. Malfort is connected with Ukraine. Flynn, Russian connection. Stone, Russian involvement. Cohen, his attorney, is also connected with the Kremlin. So she brought to our minds that this entire idea is to remove sanctions, to de-sanction so they can drill in the Arctic and they'll all be rich. What does your guest have to say about that?
I think that some of these connections, the connections seem to exist pretty clearly in terms of, Tillerson as an executive Exxon did negotiate with the Russians, did receive a medal of some kind. Manafort had company connections with Ukraine and so on. So I think the issue is, how does that play out? I guess the question is, so yes, there are these connections, but what are the implications of that? And what is proper in those business connections? And what is improper? And the lifting of sanctions does become part of that. We have had press accounts of discussions between General Flynn and the Russians about sanctions, though it's unclear how detailed those were or exactly what the details were. So I think there's these connections here, but it's the interpretation of them that can go very strongly one direction and seem like a big deal, or go business as usual, really nothing to see here. It's, again, we're back to very much in the eye of the beholder here, and we've not settled them. I do want to say, a lot of this yesterday, we looked at the testimony as if this was going to be the end of the whole story. And I want to stress how it's the cumulative impact over a long series of pieces of evidence. If you go back, whether it's Watergate or Iran-Contra or the Clinton impeachment, it's no one testimony, even though some are dramatic. It's the cumulative weight of facts that build to a conclusion, and that almost always takes months and months before we get there.
Thanks so much for being here, Charles. Charles Franklin is professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, directs the Marquette Law School Poll. The Joy Cardine Show is produced by Bill Martins, Chris Molina, and Brianne Shasso. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Coming up at this time Monday, it's the State Capitol Report. After 7:30, we'll talk with a guest who says Wisconsin shouldn't call for a constitutional convention.